Boston is part of the central nervous system of a global industry helping people hoard wealth and avoid paying taxes. That is the argument by Chuck Collins, senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies, in his new book called The Wealth Hoarders: How Billionaires Pay Millions to Hide Trillions. Tax avoidance may not be news, but Collins argues that we fail to recognize the magnitude of the money at play and the profound impact that such hoarding has on everything from affordable housing to income inequality. He's with us now, Chuck Collins. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So there's a lot I want to dive into from the book, Chuck, but to get started, I just want to have you define the term for us. You talk about the wealth defense industry. That is the center of this book. What is the wealth defense industry?
Yeah, they are the professionals. They're a veritable army of wealth managers, tax attorneys, accountants, and they are the people that the wealthy hire. I say they pay millions to hide trillions. They are actively involved in helping wealthy people, protect, create trusts, create offshore tax havens, and sequester wealth on behalf of the very wealthy. And I'm really talking about people with like $30 million or more. And what's interesting is Boston really has had a very historic role. We were really the historic center in the creation of sort of the modern wealth defense industry.
How so?
Well, it goes back to, probably more like 130 years ago as the Industrial Revolution emerged. And you think of Waltham and Slayer Mills and Lawrence and Lowell. This was the early Industrial Revolution. It was the wealth that was being generated was different from the sort of land-based fortunes. And Boston was kind of like the Silicon Valley of its day. And around that time, between the Civil War and World War I, the federal government and the state of Massachusetts got very interested in how do we tax that wealth? How do we conscript it to help pay for wars and the like? And so the Cabots and the Lodges and the wealthiest families in the region hired these professionals. They created sort of family offices and, wealth management companies to sort of keep the tax authorities away from the money.
Okay, so I think at some level, people instinctively are aware or know from news stories that something like this is out there as an industry, but your book tries to really make the case for the sheer scope, the order of magnitude of the money that we are talking about that is not, for lack of a better phrase, flowing into the economy because it is being protected from taxation and hoarded for private use. First, is that a fair way to describe it?
Yeah, I mean, I think there, recently we've been exposed to some revelations about tax avoidance and how wealthy people are avoiding taxes. But what we're talking about here is wealth that is almost placed outside the reach of taxes. It's been sequestered in trusts. It's been moved to the shadows, if you will. So it's not simply a question of how do we fix it with taxes. There's a whole mechanisms by which wealth, estimated at the global level, somewhere between $24 and $36 trillion of wealth, is not being measured. It's in the economy. That's the one correction I'd say. It's here. It's in the luxury real estate in downtown Boston. It's in investments but it is anonymously owned or owned by shell entities.
And why does that matter?
Well, part of it is that the wealthy have, it matters in terms of taxation because they are avoiding taxes. So they're shifting tax obligations onto the rest of us. The rest of us are picking up the slack because they're not paying their fair share of taxes. But it's also a way in which power is sequestered and preserved. And what we're seeing is the emergence of wealth dynasties, just multi-generational families that are accumulating huge amounts of money. And we don't really know the total amount, but it shows up as a form of power in a democratic society.
So let's poke at that a little bit. I mean, the obvious next question is, why shouldn't families be able to keep the money they earn and pass it down to the generations of their offspring?
Yeah, and you know, I think that most of us want to somehow help our children so that they don't they suffer less. But what we're talking about are dynastic concentrations of wealth. So again, $30 million all the way up to the billionaires. And if our society was functioning as it did, say, you know, after World War II, the wealthy would pay their fair share of taxes. They would maybe contribute to charity, and they would have children. And wealth would dissipate over generations. But what we're seeing is wealth is concentrating over generations. So just take one family, the Mars candy family. You know, 1983, they had about, you know, they were worth about $2.5 billion in today's wealth. 37 years later, now they're worth about $95 billion. The only way that that wealth could be accelerating that well, that vigorously, is they are not paying taxes. They've probably set up what we call dynasty trusts. So they're avoiding any kind of inheritance tax. They're not actually giving much to charity. There's not much flowing. They're not the Mackenzie Bezos of the day, Mackenzie Bezos Scott. And they are
being Jeff Bezos' former wife, just so our listeners know. Go ahead.
Yes, and who just, you know, again, has given away billions of dollars over the last year and is attempting to, as she says, empty the vault. And they're having children, but that wealth isn't dissipating. So that's a troubling sign. You know, there's an old saying, shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations. The first generation makes the money. The second generation spends the money. The third generation, hey, it's time to get back to work. You know, you don't live on inherited wealth forever. And these are families that are kind of setting themselves up to be kind of like the new economic royalty. And the same rules are going to make sure that today's billionaires will be tomorrow's wealth dynasties. So from a democracy point of view, this is troubling.
There are so many questions I want to ask you and follow up to that. I'm kind of trying to decide where to go next. Okay, so briefly, but it's legal, right? It's not like you're talking about things happening where people are breaking the law.
Well, this is kind of dancing along certainly the intent of the law. And that's one thing the wealth defense industry does well is they'll tell you, well, we're obeying the law, we're helping our clients obey the law, but actually they're writing the law, they're creating transactions, they're creating new forms of trusts that sort of obscure and mask ownership of wealth. So it's hard to, you know, so from my point of view, they are moving against the spirit and intent of the law, which is that wealthy people should pay their fair share of taxes just like everyone else.
So give the New Hampshire example. Let's bring this home. From the book, you talk about the new New Hampshire Foundation law.
Yeah, here's an interesting example where the wealth management industry in the state of New Hampshire went to the state legislature and said, we want to create a new ownership entity. It's called a civil law foundation. It's not like a charitable foundation. It is for investors primarily from around the world. They can create this entity in New Hampshire, and they don't have to report who their real owners are. So if you're a dictator in a mineral-rich country in the global south, and you want to get that money that you've basically stolen from your own people out of that country, you can bring it to New Hampshire, create a civil law foundation. No one will ever find it. And they are marketing themselves globally. This is because two or three people in a particular company went and lobbied the legislature to pass this law. That's typically how it happens. So yeah, they're saying, well, we're just obeying the law, but remember, they wrote the law.
So I want to be clear, because I admit, and I just read the book, but I don't recall you naming a specific company or people from a specific company who lobbied in New Hampshire. Are you talking about a specific New Hampshire company?
Yes, yeah. It's called Perpetua Capital. Based out of Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And one of their principals actually was actively involved in lobbying the legislature, wrote all about it as a success story, and then went to Europe to international wealth management conferences to market their new product.
So let's talk now about some of the implications here. And as we do that, the next question, Chuck, I'm going to ask you, I'm hoping you'll answer really briefly because then I want to get into housing. But just for reality, for our listeners who may not know you, this is personal for you because you inherited wealth and had decisions to make about what to do with that wealth.
Yeah, I mean, briefly, I grew up in a wealthy family. I actually kind of got the insight that, oh, there are these trusted financial advisors, and their role is to help you minimize your taxes and maximize how much money you pass on to your children and grandchildren, and that's their job. So, yeah, I had a front row seat to how this wealth defense industry works.
And it's how you got to writing about it, right?
Yeah, it's one of the reasons, the more I learned, the more I was like, wow, this is kind of a fascinating, mostly invisible world. But I have to say, it has just grown enormously. As wealth has concentrated in fewer and fewer hands, so has the number of family offices, which again, Boston was one of the center of family offices where wealthy, multi-generational wealthy families would come together and, you know, kind of manage their affairs. The number of family offices has gone from like 1,000 in 1983 to almost 10,000 today. So there's a lot of indication that this is a very growing sector as inequality grows.
And that 10,000 number is global, just to be clear.
That's globally. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So let's come back here. One of the things that's fascinating in the book is how you talk about the practical implications of this, and you use housing as an example. And you start with Millennium Tower here in Boston, where you found that 80% of the units are owned by shell corporations. Talk about why that matters, how it happens, and what it does to a housing market. We know housing is of top concern to people here in the Commonwealth.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of what I would call kind of invisible forces disrupting our Boston area housing market, along with a lot of other cities. One of them is this incredible amount of global capital that's coming into the United States looking for places to park itself. So these are wealthy billionaires from around the world. They might be a Russian oligarch. They might be, if you read the Boston Globe, you know that there's factions of the Saudi Arabian monarchy have brought money to invest in Boston real estate. They could be, Isabel de Santos, who is the wealthiest woman in Africa, who spirited $2 billion out of Angola with help from the Boston Consulting Group. So this is wealth that's coming to the U.S. because it's a stable place, and they need to spread their money around, and real estate is one of the attractive places to put it. And so think of this as like wealth storage units in the sky. These are largely vacant, anonymously owned by shell companies, limited liability companies, and a place like Millennium Tower, One Dalton Place. These are attractive because you're looking to park a lot of money. The more you can park in a luxury tower, the more you don't have to invest in other places. So that's one of the disrupting forces on our local housing market, driving up the cost of land and housing.
Because you can build these expensive units, there will be outside money that will pay for those expensive units, which raises the cost of land and disincentivizes less expensive units.
Yeah, and you could say, well, this is great, it's jobs in the construction industry, but they're jobs building, essentially are vacant properties when, we should be directing those talents toward building housing for the millions of people, and in Boston, the tens of thousands of people who need affordable housing. It's shifting resources.
We've got only a little time left, a million more things we could talk about, but let's talk about what you think we ought to do.
Well, I think one of the things we should do is strengthen the enforcement side to the extent the tax system is quite porous. So I think President Biden has said, well, let's invest in enforcement. Let's spend $80 billion over the next 10 years to monitor the kind of economic shell games of the very wealthy and make sure they pay their fair taxes. So that's one thing. Pushing for corporate transparency is a really important thing. And that can be done at the national level. We could pass, and Congress did pass something called the Corporate Transparency Act that says, listen, you have to disclose who the real owners of a company are. But we could also do that in Boston. We could have a municipal real estate disclosure law so we could know who is buying up our city. And that would help us inform the policies we need. And we can also tax luxury real estate transactions and tax vacant units to help pay for affordable housing. And finally, I think we should just shut down this hidden wealth system. We should outlaw certain kinds of trusts that have and also these transactions that lawyers invent, these sort of bogus business transactions. We should just shut those down, make them illegal, and enforce that so that So, and then I think we have to work internationally. As Secretary Janet Yellen, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is doing, let's say, let's form treaties to, you know, create a global corporate minimum income tax. The same treaties can help us close down this hidden wealth system. This All is right. totally doable.
All right. And I'm sorry to cut you off there, but we are going to get to the end of the show. That is Chuck Collins, senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies, author of a new book called The Wealth Hoarders, How Billionaires Pay Millions to Hide Trillions. Chuck, thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.